This is the Florida Spectacular Podcast with your hosts, Kathy Silustri and Rick Kilby. Keep up with Kathy at greatfloridaroadtrip.com and on Twitter and Instagram at Kathy Silustri. Find Rick at rickkilby.com. Now, discover a Florida you never knew existed.
How the hell are you, Rick?
I'm a little sweaty, but I'm otherwise good.
Why are you sweaty? It's a balmy, 89 degrees? It's gorgeous.
It was really nice when I first got out. We were talking about this before we started taping, that there's been rains here and the last four nights at least. And it's, so the mornings are not bad. So you had then there's a point and all of a sudden it's hot. You know, it's almost like you take one step and you go from, oh, it's kind of nice to it's hot.
You can go straight to hell with your rain that you're getting. That's just
you're not getting it.
No. In fact, we had company over the other night and I saw the wind kick up. I saw the outflow, you know, where it sucks everything in. And I said, guys, I know it's a little warm out, but I think it's going to thunderstorm. Can we go sit on the back porch? And they're like, hell yeah. And we watched and we waited and we had 2 minutes of rain, no thunder, back to business. And I was heartbroken. I love summer. When I moved to Florida, I was a little girl and the first summer we lived here, my mom immediately got a job, but my dad had to have hernia surgery before he could get a job. And that was back when hernia surgery was like, I remember an 11-week recovery. That's how old I am. And so he was on like very light duty and he would let me go play out in the rain. He'd be like, just come in if you see lightning. That's all I care about. And, you know, I'm sure my mom didn't know this because I was out there through thunderstorms and I was having a great time. So, I mean, that's what I think Florida is made for, is being outdoors in the summer. But the rain is an integral part of that. And our guest, who is being very patient, is like, okay, why are we talking about what you did when you were seven? Let's get to the part about how you don't die outside now.
That was all set up.
It was brilliant. For people who do no rehearsal and planning, we are really on point. So I'd like to welcome our guest, Stephen Khabibi. Stephen, thanks for joining the podcast today.
Kathy, Rick, thanks for having me. I really appreciate being here and I'm excited to talk.
Well, you know, your email, you reached out to us and said, I think it's great that you talk about hiking in Florida and going outside, but can I come on and talk about how, basically you said how you don't die hiking outside in Florida. And you weren't talking about snakes or gators, because we know those aren't real dangers. we weren't talking about hogs, which we know are real dangers. You were talking about just how to survive the heat and the sun. And it's such a timely topic because it is pretty brutal. I'm going out on a boat today and our whole, where we're going to take the boat is where are the fewest no wake zones so we can get a breeze going. But I'll go out walking in Florida any time of the year, but I realize that I am an anomaly, right? So Stephen, you do a lot of writing about how to walk around the Walt Disney World property without dying, which is hard enough. And I actually think that's hotter because there's more pavement. I think you're out in the woods, it's a little bit easier because you've got shade. And that's an easy 20 degrees right there if you're walking through something forested. But I always, my big thing is water. Like I was, not to talk about Disney too much, we were on the monorail at Disney for something. And there was a woman who had this little, not even 1-year-old in a stroller, and she couldn't get her to calm down. And she was just screaming and red faced. And I was looking at her and I finally said, I don't want to intrude. I said, but how much water has your daughter had today? How much hydration? And she goes, well, I don't know. She had a soda at lunch. I'm like, do you have a popsicle or anything for her? And she's like, oh my God, and she freaked out. Cause she's like, my baby's dehydrating and people don't think about it. And that translates to hiking. Most seasoned hikers like Ryan Worthington, one of our podcast supporters, but also who is one of the Florida Madcaps, I am fully expecting that Ryan will be either the guy rescuing somebody lost in the Everglades one day and on the news, or Ryan is going to be the guy who lived out there for 2 months because he just didn't feel like coming back in. We don't have to worry about, but I think a lot of these people who decide they're going to go for a walk in the woods are completely unprepared for how to do it. I think they think, well, I'll just wear sunscreen and a short sleeve shirt and it's going to be great. That's what you do, right, Rick?
I've taken to wearing these things that go on your arms, you know, that kind of cover
sleeves.
You up. Yeah, they're like little sleeves you put on,
yeah.
You know. And then I wear big socks so that it's because I don't like putting on sunscreen. I put a little bit on my neck. I have a big hat. So, but I'm going to hear Stephen. Let's hear his point of view.
Yeah, no, you outlined so many different things that just people don't quite understand before they visit Florida. So first, yeah, clearly it's hot, but more so, and we were talking about this earlier, it's straight up humid. And the thing about the humidity out here is that, you know, your body is made to sweat when it gets hot. The sweat then evaporates and cools you down. It's your own natural cooling system. But the thing about the humidity is since the air is so dense with water, it's more difficult for the sweat to actually evaporate off of your body. Therefore, your body's natural cooling system is dampened, which is why the humidity makes you feel even hotter. The heat index last weekend out here in Orlando was like 111. It was something ridiculous. So that makes staying hydrated that much more important, just like you said, Kathy. And you know, to put a number on it, I always recommend my clients and everyone I talk to that visit the Disney parks, typically, you know, when you're out all day in the heat, especially in Florida, you want to aim for something around 150 ounces of water a day for guys, 100 ounces of water for girls. And that throws people off typically. But not only, you know, is that fluid taken in through water, it's also taken in through the food that you take in, that you eat. Milk is mostly water. Coffee is like 99% water. So all that stuff counts too. So staying hydrated is a big thing. Rick, you mentioned sleeves and coverage. And that's one that's like such a big misinterpretation or almost like a myth in terms of going out to the parks is wearing short sleeve shirts to stay cool. But you're exposing your skin to the sun. Sunburn is another form of getting dehydrated. Therefore, your body has less water to function with. You end up feeling like you're dying at the end of the day. So coverage is so important. I'm glad you brought that up. And if you're not covering yourself with longer sleeves, sunscreen, put on sunscreen before you step out into the sun. Otherwise, your sweat's gonna wash off everything. Put on sunscreen every 2 hours. Like all of that stuff helps to deal with the heat, but also keep your body temperature lower, keep you hydrated. That way you feel like you're not going to die in the end.
You know, when I was younger, I ran pools for the Y over the summer. They'd open up satellite pools and I was a lifeguard and I loved it. But a couple of things you said tie right in line with that. We used to tell parents and the kids too, that for every 15 minutes you are active in the sun, you should have 8 ounces of water. So I usually do at least 100 ounces a day when I'm inside. Yeah. But the other thing I would tell people, and people don't believe me, so it was so nice to hear somebody else validate that, if you drink more water, if you do get a sunburn, it makes it better. It helps you not get a sunburn, and it makes it better. It's, you know, I'm part reptile. I'll go out in that 100-degree heat, and I'll be just delighted. But I will also be sucking down water all day. I mean, my mom jokes that when I was a baby, when they took my bottle away from me, I banged my head on the refrigerator door because I wanted my bottle back. And I said, I grew out of that. And she said, and she just pointed at my water bottle. She's like, did you really though? You still carry a bottle with you? I'm like, yeah, but it's got water in it. It's so good. And people will say, I don't want to drink that much water because it's going to make me pee. Well, yes, that's a sign you're not dehydrated. When you stop peeing, when you stop sweating, you're in trouble. And once you're into that, especially not so much like you talk about the theme parks, not so much there because you can remedy that much more quickly than you can if you're in the Everglades or Ocala National Forest. I mean, you run out of water because you just didn't want to carry it or whatever. There's no... I mean, unless you want to take your chance and drink out of a spring and Rick shaking his head, like, don't do that.
No. It's a big risk. Our springs are, you know, there's not clean water coming out of them anymore. So you shouldn't do that. They're full of nitrates and.
Oh, I mean, if you're dehydrating and you have heat stroke and that's your only choice, I don't want somebody suing the podcast like, I almost died because Rick told me not to drink spring water. So
I suppose that's it. But, you know, the risk you take. You know, if you're out there a long time, you could get something that makes you have diarrhea and then dehydrate.
Then you get more dehydrated.
Yeah. So We're not hearing a lot of cases of that happening in Florida these days. So has anybody you know, like, been out so long on a hike in Florida that they did die just from the exposure? Has that happened? Because you hear that, you know, you think about that like in the mountains or something, somewhere, someplace where it's really cold. But has that happened in Florida?
I've never heard of it.
I don't think, I mean, you know, I've heard of, you know, alligators getting people recently, lightning on occasion.
One person, why you got to trash the
There were a couple other, there were a couple other attacks.
So mean.
Sadly, they pulled a couple of them out, the alligators. But that's neither here nor there. We're not doing an alligator show today. I want to get us back on track. But so it is good to know that. Well, so I did want to ask about the sunburn and the sunscreen, because I spend a lot of time at the dermatologist getting things burned off and cut off. But they tell me that a lot of that damage happened when I was a kid, that, you know, most of what you're dealing with as an adult are those stupid sunburns you got when you didn't know better and had a Budweiser visor instead of a full hat as a fourth grader. So is that your understanding too, that the damage you do as a kid, it has a lot to do with what happens to your skin as an adult?
Yeah, that's a good question. And to be honest, Rick, I haven't heard that before, but I mean, what's like at this point in time, especially if you're just out traveling, like what's that to stop you from making sure that nothing worse happens in the future?
Oh, right? Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm a big believer in sun protection. My wife she's really crazy about it. Like everything's got to be covered, you know, hands and all that stuff. And you just see people who, like, you know, you can tell they've had issues. You know, if I'm just going outside to get the mail or something, I don't worry about it. But usually when it's my longer walks. So, what outside of the parks, what are some of the places you like to get out there and explore?
Out here in Florida, yeah.
Yeah.
I think, so a couple things come to mind. More recently, my wife and I, we went out to do some kayaking in Winter Park along the canals.
Oh, that's cool.
And yeah, you show up. There's a local that has his own set of kayaks. You just rent on the spot there. He usually takes cash, and then you just get to go for a couple hours. And I mean, they have a boat tour there too. But like, to be a little closer to the water is super special, to be able to go through each of those canals, because there's a whole canal system out there that I didn't really know about, and to be there up close and, you know, see things right there along the water is really, really special. Which, by the way, you talked about concrete radiating the heat. Water also radiates or reflects back heat towards you. So that's another thing to think about if you're going to be kayaking.
So you said recently, we're taping this in the Ides of July. How long ago was this? I want to make a point. How long ago?
This is back in like February.
Oh, okay. Because I was going to say, I have friends who come April, they're just done kayaking. They're like, it's too hot. I'm like, what are you talking about? The water's right there. You just get in the water if it's too hot. And I was going to just give you a little shout out for being brave enough to kayak in the summer.
Well, honestly, I don't think that would stop me from going nowadays either. As long as, one, you've got coverage with, you know, clothing. And then, of course, I will always go with some sort of bucket hat. That way I cover not only my eyes and my forehead, but also my neck.
Yeah.
Shout out to you, Rick, for all the coverage.
The other thing I like to do with, you know, my hat when it's warm out is I dunk the whole thing in water and put it on my head. And it's like, you feel a chill at first. That's a great, great way to do it. So you'll just jump out of your kayak in the middle, or do you go someplace where you can wade?
Me? Kathy?
Yeah.
I mean, I have a cockpit kayak, so it's not, I have to be able to wade. I can get myself in and out of it in water where I can't touch bottom, but it's not, sadly, until Calypso died, you know, she was always in the kayak, and it was a very uncomfortable experience for her, for me to get out. She also always wanted to get out when I did. But I'll just go where I can wade. I mean, there's not a lot of deep water to kayak in, if you think about it.
Yeah.
In Florida. I mean, it's, if you're on a river, it's really rare that I'm kayaking a river that I can't get to a bank and get out. And I also don't tend to get out in blackwater rivers that much, because I don't want to, look, if that gator is sitting there watching TV or trying to meditate and I get out and bump him on the head, I don't want his day to get bad. I feel bad. We're in their homes. But yeah, I don't like to get out if it's over my head. I do a lot of beach kayaking. I don't kayak the springs as much because I find that our springs are a little crowded. We have a pretty hard and fast rule when it comes to any type of boating, and that is weekends are not where we want to be outside because there's too many weekend warriors.
Yeah.
And Barry's a retired boat captain. I've worked on the water on and off for the past 30 years, and there's too many risks. Like, I think once I was so silly when I was very young, I decided to take my kayak out on Memorial Day to Fort DeSoto. And I think when the little speedboat got within 20 feet of me and threw a wake, I decided I was never taking my kayak or any boat out on a holiday or weekend day again. So I'm more concerned about that than the heat. I mean, the heat I can recover from. Some idiot in a boat, doing something stupid, that's more my concern. But I like the summertime in Florida because the water notwithstanding, I find that a lot of the outdoor spaces are kind of empty. And I think that's a shame, but I also understand that it's a lot for a lot of people. But I think that hydration and coverage are the two messages you have, Stephen, is like, stay covered, stay hydrated, and you'll be okay. I mean, I'm not suggesting you go into Everglades National Park at noon on July 15th, but honestly, sunrise in the Everglades is always beautiful. Always.
If I can add something really quick, I think another really useful tool that I use with my clients, but also something that I just like to share with everyone is, really knowing how to listen to your body and how it knows, how it reacts to everything you do. And that really means proper preparation before you make the trip. So yes, it's good to be active beforehand. That way you can walk the steps, whether or not it's at the Disney parks or if it's on a trail out here. But knowing how your body can handle, 5,000-10,000 steps or a 5 or 10 mile hike and how it feels during the walk and afterwards is crucial because then, controlling for what you can control out of a trip and not controlling what you can't control, like the weather, you know how to modify how you walk, how much you walk, how quickly you walk when you're actually out there in the wilderness and, you don't have as many resources to reach out to. So, you slow down. You take more breaks if you really need to. And the tool that I use that I was alluding to earlier is really called the light system. So just like a traffic light, you've got red light, yellow light, green light. Green light means you're feeling good. You're not feeling like you're getting tired. You're not feeling like you're super thirsty because if you're thirsty, you're probably already dehydrated. Yellow light means, hey, my body's feeling a little tired or I've got some soreness going on. Maybe I should slow down a little bit, but I can keep going. Red is like you've gone on a kayaking adventure one day and then the next day you went on a hike and now you're like, I'm dead tired, super sore. I cannot get out of bed this morning. That's probably the sign that says you should take it a lot easier. Maybe do a pool day or like hang out in the lanai for now and rest so that you can hit it again on your next day out on your trip. So the light system is super useful to help listen to your own body. That way you know how much you could do when you're out hiking, kayaking, out here in Florida.
I have a question because a couple of times you mentioned your clients. Tell us what it is you do.
Oh, we should have done a proper intro. Huh?
Yeah, we didn't really. We just kind of jumped right in there. We had a good segue going. We didn't want to mess it up.
No worries. So my mission as a doctor of physical therapy and a Disney World local is I help travelers prepare for their trip like it's an endurance event. That way they can walk more. They can feel strong in their bodies. They can come back home feeling recovered, energized, and not wrecked. So that includes digital programming where I give individualized advice and programming to my clients so that they can meet their specific goals of enjoying the magic or enjoying the, the beauty of Florida, which most of my clients are the ones that come out here. So not only are they going around Disney, but they're also going around everywhere in Florida, believe it or not.
There is a Disney Springs has a running shoe store, Fit to Run.
Yeah.
And that family, the Robinson family, is incredible because I go to Fit to Run here. They're based, I believe, the Robinson family are out of Manatee County. And Rick, they have this beautiful preserve at the tip of Anna Maria called, not Anna Maria, it's called Robinson Preserve. And it's because the Robinson family just donated this whole plat of waterfront property to, I think it was the county. And so when I found that out, and I found it out because I had registered for a 5K at the Robinson Preserve, and it was sponsored by Fit to Run. That's where I get my shoes now because, you know, you want to support the companies that support Florida's environment.
Sure.
When I saw them open in Disney Springs, I thought, man, that's a gold mine because people come to Florida and they think, well, I just need flip-flops. But the reality is if you're walking anywhere, the forest, you know, even the beach, you want water shoes. Disney, my God, you know, you want good shoes. And I think people think, oh, my feet are going to be too hot. And I am. And I've had a lot of really weird part-time jobs. I have twice sold shoes. And that is the one thing I do. I have a degree from Dillard's Shoe University from the 90s. I'm very proud of that. They did a lot of good education. But that is the one thing I will always spend money on is a decent walking shoe. I mean, I have.
Yeah.
I actually have, because I had plantar fasciitis, which is now going away, but it'll flare up. And we have terrazzo and stone floors in the house. And I love to be barefoot. I even have decent flip-flops that I wear. I can't wear my Kinos for any length of time anymore. But it makes a difference. The shoes, the walking in the forest. Like, don't make the mistake of thinking, I'm going to be outdoors, my feet are going to be hot. No, wear a decent shoe, even if it's a hiking sandal. But there is something, I don't think this is your area, Stephen, but there is something I think that people are freaked out about with being outdoors right now. It's gotten a little press, and that is the tick situation.
Oh, good call.
And that's the other thing, because ticks in and of themselves are, they're gross. They've got a mission. But there's this tick now that I didn't think was in Florida yet, but my husband informed, you know, you're shaking your head. You know what I'm talking about?
The one that makes you so you can't eat beef?
Yes. Or any animal product, the Lone Star tick. I found out about it. Last summer, we did a trip through Mississippi, Louisiana, Alabama. And once we got west of the Mississippi, you know, I have celiac, so I use an app to find places that have gluten-friendly food. And a lot of these places we would go to, great food, but they'd say, we are alpha gal friendly. And my first reaction, I am such a jerk, was like, oh, what is this? Like some bullshit keto diet thing? Like I'm going to be an alpha gal, like an alpha male. And I really thought it was just like an eating trend. But I looked it up and I'm like, holy shit, you can get bitten by this tick. And no one knows if it will affect you, how badly it'll affect you. But yeah, most people, they can't eat any type of animal product anymore. And big thing, Texas, but it has made its way east. And the thing with it is you don't know if it's just going to be like a rash if you have a filet mignon or if you need an EpiPen. And
wild.
That's not a situation like if you pull the tick off in time, it's okay. It's that is a big.
Yeah. That's like
socks, pants tucked into your socks. I mean, that's going to change how we hike in Florida. But from what you're saying, Stephen, that's actually better when you're hiking in Florida is to have your skin covered anyway, because it'll keep you cooler. Like jeans are not the answer, right? You don't want to wear jeans.
No.
Definitely not. So typically, you know, I will always advise getting coverage, making sure it's relatively loose. That way you have air in between the fabric and your skin for your body to cool down. Light-colored clothing is great. Jeans or any denim, I highly advise against, just because it sticks to your skin. It weighs you down. And then also, the type of material that you wear can matter too. So just because it's marketed as some sort of fitness exercise clothing material doesn't necessarily mean it's great for the humidity, right? Something that works like let's throw a brand out there, a Lululemon shirt that works really well when you're running out in California might not necessarily work when you're out here in Florida, because I've learned from experience, I've had shirts that say, you know, when I go out for a run and I'm training for my next run Disney race, I will come back and the shirt is soaking wet. It's weighing me down and it's so sticky. And I find that if I compare it to a shirt that is mostly a mix of nylon and spandex, then it will absorb absorb my sweat, but it won't weigh me down. It won't feel so sticky, and I'll feel just a touch more comfortable. And I find that the more comfortable I feel whenever I'm out, the more I can focus on the journey forward, really enjoying the moment. So the clothing is a huge, plays a huge factor into things. So you're absolutely right, Kathy.
I don't know if there's any backing to this. I think maybe I am just so pro water. I've had people tell me you're going to screw up your electrolytes. You drink too much water. And I don't think it's possible. You know, they talk about getting drunk on water. But before I go out, I will also drink a stock up on water. Like I'll drink a lot of water. If I know I'm going out at 8 a.m. and I'm going to go, you know, for a walk through a trail or something, I will drink a lot of water before I go. Is that bad? Is that good? Does it matter?
You know, honestly, I'm with how I'm seeing people hydrate. I think you're going to have a hard time trying to drink too much water before you realize that.
Could you tell my friends, please?
As a 61-year-old, I will say a lot of it is dependent on the ability you have to hit a restroom every now and then. It's a little bit different when you get a little older because it's like, I got to have a restroom break if I'm going to drink all that water.
Well, now let's hold on a second. Are you trying to tell me you have never peed in the woods, Rick?
No. I have peed. Of course. But like if you're out on a trail and there's a lot of other people on there, it's not as easy, you know. And if you got, you know, the downside to living in Orlando is I can't just step out and go on a hike. I have to drive somewhere if I'm going to be out in nature. You know, that's the downside of it.
So
an hour is the closest, but most places are 45 minutes to an hour that are good hikes. So, you know, I will have to make a stop. I'm getting real personal here.
let me ask you if we're getting really personal. And I heard you say that you're a medical professional, Stephen. Do men, I guess, don't really have a pelvic floor like women do that they can exercise? Is that not a thing? I'm serious.
No. That's a great question. And the myth is that they don't.
This podcast goes everywhere.
Men indeed do have a pelvic floor. And they have muscles there that help with everything going on down there. So, you know, that can be something. You've heard of pelvic floor, pelvic health. It's been reworded as women's health, but really it should be called pelvic health because males and females all have a pelvic floor. And just because, you know, females get professional help from pelvic floor health professionals doesn't mean that males shouldn't either. So that's my way of advocating for guys too, just FYI.
Can men do Kegels? Okay. See, this is one area where men's health is actually behind women's health. What a relief to see that happening for a while.
You're not wrong.
Change. Sorry.
You're not, and it's just not something that is talked about enough. So
How did we get here?
You brought it up. You said you can't drink that much water and I'm smashing that.
Well, that's as much as I'm going to say on the topic because there's HIPAA laws and I'm going to enforce my own personal HIPAA boundary right here. I'm curious though. I want to go back to the client thing. How do you get clients? Like, do you have a big online presence? Like, how do people find you?
Yeah. So I am on Instagram. I go by fit.forthemagic. I own Fit for the Magic and that's how I, you know, reach out to people. I mostly find people through Instagram, but also through personal referrals. I'm growing a network out through here, in the Orlando area. So really like the best way I've been getting new clients is by word of mouth, reaching out, talking, conversating, going on runs with people. I don't live too far from Celebration, so like driving through Disney property, meeting people there, going through Celebration to meet people there, going to Disney Springs, you know, Fit to Run is great. So yeah, it's really just a matter of being with the people that I want to serve.
So do you find that when your clients, you know, say they're from out of town and they want to do the Disney stuff, do they like to get outside of Disney and do some, you know, do they ask you for recommendations for hiking and things in the area?
So they mostly ask for like food places to go to because I think the food culture is getting really big here in Orlando.
Yeah.
Every now and then I do get, well, especially like with my parents or my in-laws, they're like, what's good outdoorsy things to do out here? Like, and... And some of my wife's cousins are like, there's nothing to do in Florida. And I look at them
God.
I'm like, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry, Kathy. But I look at them and I'm like,
exploded. Nobody else can see it.
I look at them and I'm like, you have no idea.
You're not trying hard enough. You're just open your eyes and go online. It's, there's an abundance.
Yes. Thank you.
I mean, I'm amazed. I am even to the point now where on Instagram, I'm fascinated by these reels, and I'm trying to decide if I want to start doing where these people go to places and they're not on camera, but they're like, here's an amazing secret spot in Florida. And I'm like, why isn't anybody doing that with outside Florida stuff? Like most
they
of
are,
it,
they are. Don't are do they? It. Yes. Yes. That's what I see most of the time.
Oh,
you know,
see,
I have
like,
seen so much. When I started my spring stuff in 2013, 2012, whatever that is, it was relatively new. And I'm so sick of seeing the spring stuff online now, you know. And look at Ryan. We talked about him at the beginning. That's all he does is go to these grape spots and do little videos of them. There's a lot of people like that.
No, I meant more of the, how do you say influencer without making it sound like a pejorative? Not like Ryan where
like
he's
content
actually
creators.
Like they're particularly passionate about anything other than they're creating the content. It's not, they're not like the Ryans and the Ricks of the world.
But I would say that Ryan is a content creator and that, you know, that's what he's doing. He's taking advantage of the tools that those annoying influencers have created and just doing it in his own way.
Those are the ones I meant.
Yeah. Okay. So you could do it too, but just, you know, we talked about the springs is they get overused. So what's happened here recently is De Leon Springs has now gone to a reservation system.
There's four now, right?
Yeah, Itchituckney does. So that's a good thing because it keeps them from being overused. But and it means that people really want to use these resources. But, you know, like you said about getting on the water, it's people who go around in inner tubes with beer and drop their beer cans in the water and, you know, people who aren't necessarily nature lovers. So there's that.
Well, I mean, that's one of the ways I think Disney has spoiled tourism in Florida is I think it's what every 30 steps, there's a trash can at Disney.
Right.
And that's by design because Walt Disney figured out that's how far people walk before they just say, screw it and throw it down.
Wow.
But then when people leave the parks, I think they think there's some magical janitorial team. And you go, like, I mean, I remember being at Fort DeSoto, which is just an absolute gem of a park in Pinellas County. It's five different islands on the southern tip, beach, trails, absolutely gorgeous, kayaking, anything you want to do there with nature, you can. And I was there once it was like the end of a holiday weekend, and the amount of trash I saw was just, it made me cry because I was like, how could you come to this beautiful place and just throw everything? I mean, it's one of the things that really bothers me. I think we've talked about it. I don't really go for a walk on the beach anymore without bringing a garbage bag because I know I'm just going to see it. And the same thing is now true at the springs. It's true on the river. We're loving these places to death in so many ways, but we don't know how to enjoy them properly. And you know, we obviously don't want people to die on the trails because that's just more litter. Trying to bring it back to
Well, I would love to get some tips from Stephen. So we'd love to do this because it's fun to kind of get an insider's view on places. Would you be more comfortable giving five places that you know, maybe are off the beaten path at Disney or Winter Garden? Because you said you live in Winter Garden.
Yeah.
And we love Winter Garden. We are big fans of Winter Garden.
Yes, we are.
I live kind of near Hamlin in a more established neighborhood. So we moved out here because when we first moved into the neighborhood area, the trees were already overgrown. It felt like it was lived in. We love it out here. I mentioned earlier the canals of Winter Park. Does that count as part of my top five?
Sure. and I think probably where you meet the people to get the kayaks is Dinky Dock, which is
yes, thank you.
There used to be a little railroad line that went between Winter Park and Orlando called the Dinky Line Railroad, and so it's right kind of just past Rollins, and there's a little parking lot there and it's called Dinky Dock, and that's where you can
That's exactly it. The second thing I would recommend is anything along the West Orange Trail. So if you go a little bit north of Winter Garden, up into Oakland Park, beautiful area right by Lake Apopka. Shaded trails, paved. You can walk it. You can run it. You can take your bike out there. And believe it or not, it's a little bit of hilly. People think Florida's flat.
Yeah.
There are certain areas if you look in the right places. But yeah, that place is awesome. You mentioned springs. I mean, the first spring that my wife and I went to was Rock Springs at Kelly Park. Close enough to the Orlando area to enjoy, far enough to where you really feel like you're getting out there, out of the city. And then I mentioned we're out here near Hamlin. So, Horizon West Regional Park. I don't know that one. It's technically, I think, in Hamlin, but it's a big park. It's got over like 7 miles of unpaved trails. They're expanding it now. So they're going to have a new big grass area for what they hope to be like farmers markets and big events, splash pad for the kiddos. So really fun park to just go to and get away from like suburban areas and then also the city. So I think that's four.
Four.
I'm going to, I want to at least mention a food place.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, no, and you can do more than five if you want. We don't want to hold you back.
Yeah, our math is not always great. So
no.
Yeah,
no.
So the first, if anyone asks me where to go for food, I'm going to mention first and foremost Poke Hana. I love Hawaiian culture. I love going to Hawaii. And when I heard of this place called Poke Hana, they have two locations, one here in Winter Garden, one in, I think, technically in Orlando. We went in. We learned that the owner is from, I believe, Kauai. And man, if there is anything that is as close to traditional Hawaiian poke, this is the place. So you got to go
this
here.
This looks amazing. I'm looking at the website and I'm so hungry right now.
Great spot. And then if you find yourself closer into downtown Orlando, anything off of Mills, the Mills district is growing so much.
Yeah.
Mills Market is relatively new and their presence of Asian food is insane. Coming from the Bay Area in California and growing up basically in like just a melting or a salad bowl of, you know, Asian ethnicities. Coming out here, I was like, what am I going to find to kind of fill that craving? And it did not take long for me to find Mills. Mills is
it's a, it's you know, it's great because I have to, if I'm going to go any like to Winter Park, I have to go through that neighborhood. And you go on a weekend and there's just people everywhere. You know, that neighborhood is vibrant and alive. There's a place that I really love. I think it's called Veggie Garden. It's all vegetarian Vietnamese food. And it's like tucked in this little secret garden and it's so good. And it's so awesome. My brother has been to Vietnam and he just loves it and he loves the food and that's his favorite place. And, you know, there's a Thai coffee place. And have you been to the ice cream place there on Mills? Sambuguita, I think it's called. It's
yeah. You know, that's funny you mentioned that because it's Filipino inspired. And I mean, both my parents are from the Philippines. So when we found that place, I was like, oh, okay, I'm home now. The flavors there of ice cream at Sambuguita is so good. So good. So good. I'm glad you brought that up.
Thank you for saying it correctly. But yeah, so it's cool that you know these places that are outside the park that really show the what I believe is the true identity of Orlando, not the theme parks, you know, that is there. You know, the theme parks are great and everything, but there is in Orlando, you know, beyond the theme parks.
Well, I don't know how to explain this to people. The theme park, Walt Disney World, is not in Orlando.
Nope.
Okay. I feel like I'm fighting an uphill battle because it's so associated with Orlando, but you have to drive. It's going to take you an hour to get to Orlando from Walt Disney World proper. I mean, if you want to go to Mills 50, is that's what, about an hour, you think?
Yeah.
Easily.
Yeah. Well, you know, the joke of Orlando is an hour from Orlando. So.
Yeah. I've used it. That's yours. I give you credit. I use it.
Oh, it's not mine. I learned that years ago when I lived out there. Yeah, it's true. It's okay.
It is true.
It all depends on the time of day. You know, this time of year, if you get a thunderstorm, it could easily be double that.
Yeah. Well, or you get into a rear end collision like I did when I was on my way out to the History Center all those years ago.
Yeah. And it had been, we had been in a drought. It hadn't rained in 6 months. And then all at once, it all came down.
Whoosh.
Oh, on the day that Kathy's driving on I-4.
And I hit somebody. So, of course, that slowed me down. I'm like, I'm never going to get asked back again. And I haven't been. But I love, you know, I know we started out talking about getting outside in Florida and how to do it safely. But I also love, I've said it before, if Orlando had a beach, I would live there. I love the, and it's a product, too, of the fact that it is a very touristy area. Because you have, I've had the best Ethiopian food of my life in a little strip mall off I Drive.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think there's any food you can't get in Orlando. And I love that so much because I'll get a craving for a burger or something burger adjacent every now and then. But for the most part, I just like to try different food. And there is no shortage of it in Orlando. I mean, it's just incredible. It's got so much.
The list is only growing. It's true.
And I heard there's a, going back, not to Disney, but near Disney, there's a restaurant opening now that is in the Flamingo Crossings area, which is off 429 in Orlando, that's going to be just a tribute to our cattle heritage and citrus. And I can't think of the name of it right now, but I was very excited about that because I think the closest thing we had to that for a while was, what was it, Cooper Hawk? There was a restaurant out in Orlando that had some.
I don't know. Isn't there one of the big hotels that has like an old Florida themed place? It's like a Land Remembered kind of themed. It's the big hotel that has ice every.
Gaylord Palms.
Don't they have an old Florida themed restaurant?
I don't know. I've only been there for ice once and it was cold and I didn't like it.
I don't know. That is interesting.
I just like, because this is going to, Flamingo Crossings does get a lot of tourists.
I don't even know where that is.
It is, it's like the back door to Walt Disney World. It's technically part of Reedy Creek Improvement District, but it doesn't look like Disney. It's where they have the college program housing there. Mm-hmm. They have some hotels. This restaurant is going to be called Flatlands. And what I like about this is that it's like a way of getting stealth Florida history to people who aren't expecting it. Like, you know, come for the mouse, stay for the history type of thing. I don't know if that's really the best way to describe it, but I'm excited about it. It's called Flatlands.
Flatlands Bar and Grill, I think, right?
Yeah. And it's just going to be a little Florida themed. And I really love that. So anyway, there's no shortage of food, but I like that you can get a little Florida, whatever. Anyway, I'm clearly hungry. I haven't had breakfast yet. So, and I'm not going to have time to have it because right when we're done taping, I have another thing. So thank you for getting me all geared up to have food, Stephen and Rick, that is easily 2 hours away from me.
Yeah. The drive between St. Pete and Orlando is just brutal these days.
I go the back way. So it takes just as long, but it's far more enjoyable. I get off I-4 at Kathleen Lake.
Oh, by Lakeland.
And it's just a beautiful Dean Still Road.
Do you go north or south there?
North.
Oh.
I think.
Interesting. Because you could go south too. No, you couldn't. Osceola County would get really bad.
No, I mean, it takes me, it basically takes me through a wildlife management area and a preserve and just some places that development hasn't hit yet. It's a 2-lane road. It's not crowded at all. Like I said, it takes every bit as long, but you're not stuck at that exit 55, you know, US 27. And it basically bypasses I-4 from 27 to Champions Gate. You get out at Champions Gate, at which point you can still stay on the back roads or you can out. But once you get there, it's really not that bad. And then you got to get past some of the Disney iDrive stuff and then you're golden. But the Orlando Drive, the big thing for me is US 27. That's the one where I get rageful.
So come to our podcast. We got traffic tips. We got health tips. We got dining tips, you know, vacation tips, exercise tips, you name it. We got everything on this podcast.
I think we're really a full service podcast this week. You know, Stephen, it's been a pleasure. I don't know if this is what you expected when you came on the podcast, but this is what you get. Anybody else is out there thinking about going, do I want to be a guest?
Be ready.
It literally goes from Mickey Mouse to Kegels and Filipino food. So I don't know how better to describe us. Anyway, we will have all the places Stephen mentioned in the show notes and our own links that we mentioned, so you can do that too. The only thing I'm not going to put in there is how to get to Orlando on the back road. You're going to have to email me and ask me if you want to know. But this is the part of the show where we test Rick's knowledge to see if he can remember more than five of our paid supporters.
No.
Bets, you can do it, man.
Oh, boy.
Bets Boys Adventures.
That's one.
Mark Kilby.
That's better get that right.
Davita Bryan.
Breyer. That's three. Breyer. We'll give it to you.
And that's it.
No, it's not. What about our friend?
Ryan Worthington?
Yes.
And something Groves.
Oh, Socata Grove, Celeste Welch.
So there, five.
You're doing great. I went down there and they gave me some seed pods for butterfly. Pea pods? They're the purple flowers you can eat. And I'm so excited they've sprouted. Anyway. Laura, thank you for those paid supporters. We also want to thank our other paid supporters, Angela Connolly, Natalie Zachrick, Elise Smith, Brian Woodall, Brad Sager, Stephanie Hughley, Kelly Sturdy, Sean Coulter, Nicole Amrose, Chica Font, and Stephanie Stearns. And as always, we really, really, really want you to support the podcast. It's super easy to do. You just go to floridaspectacular.buzzsprout.com and you click support. Super great. We are piecemealing out my Florida book collection. So anybody who joins between now and the time that these books are gone, you're going to get a free random Florida book in addition to all the other cool stuff. And we are working on a super cool t-shirt. So with that said, Stephen, thanks for being on the podcast. Rick, I will see you next week. Same bat time, same bat channel.
And just a plug for our talk at Floridarama, August 15th, live podcast. Should be very interesting. Mermaids to Monkeys. Yeah, it's going to be cool.
I got to send you an article about the time they let monkeys loose in Gulfport. I just found out about it myself.
There's always monkeys getting loose in Florida.
Somebody read the article and they said, I can't believe we had monkeys that somebody just thought were a good idea. And I'm like, I can't believe it only happened once. Anyway, maybe we'll do a monkey podcast soon.
Aren't they all?
A little bit. All right, folks, that's going to do it for us this week. We will see you next time on the Florida Spectacular.
Bye.
Bye.